bumping around the town like when you're driving a Range Rover. Been driving the new science, and I be kicking the new knowledge.
And I see to a degree that you can't get in college.
It's the sound of science. The sound of science.
And thanks to the breakfast team for A, getting up at 5 in the morning, and B, a few hours of great radio. But stay tuned, because next up is Discovery, the national science radio show. And on this week, we'll be featuring iron nanoparticles, Dr. David Suzuki, and using technology to treat mental illness.
Welcome.
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 Stand and welcome.
Hello, good evening and welcome
to Discovery.
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 Listen to Discovery.
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 Sounds like a lot of fun.
Somewhere in space, this may all be happening right now.
Now, to the speeded up brain of a user, that sound lasts for 4 hours and sounds like this.
Discovery.
Yeah. Once again, welcome to Discovery, the national science show. And this week, we'll be checking out cleaning up with nanoparticles. We'll be hearing from Dr. David Suzuki, and we investigate treating mental illness with technology. But first up, here's the news with Chris Stewart.
In Discovery News this week, short of sleep, you should be a fruit fly. And nuclear fusion on your desktop. Again. But first, in polar news, what's huge moves at a blazing speed of 1 kilometre a year, backwards, and could bring serious problems for the native species of the Antarctic continent. A British Antarctic Survey research project has reported in Nature this week that almost every Antarctic glacier has gone into retreat, pulling back from the edge of the continent. BAS researcher Alison Cook says that of the 244 glaciers on the Antarctic Peninsula that they have observed with aerial photographs since 1940, almost 90% of them are moving backwards. This reverses the trend of forward glacial motion in the first half of last century. The researchers suspect the retreat is due to increases in temperature around the peninsula. In the last 50 years, the temperature has gone up by around 2 degrees. The researchers do not believe the glacial retreat will cause problems with sea levels. However, if they go too far, they may expose the bare rock coastline. This may in turn attract new species to the shores, threatening local wildlife. And from the mutant fruit fly department, if you have ever wished you could get by on less sleep, then the humble fruit fly may be able to show you the way. The catch is, you'll have to mutate your DNA first. A group of geneticists in the US have been testing the effects of sleep deprivation on fruit flies with a range of small changes, or mutations, to their genes. They're using fruit flies since these bugs' relatively simple DNA sequence is already very well catalogued. They found that a particular mutated gene, which they call mini-sleep, allows the fruit flies to cope with much less snooze time than normal flies. The mini-sleep bugs were kept awake for 24 hours, which is a very long time for a fly, and they had very little change to their reaction times. Normal flies, on the other hand, didn't cope quite so well. The good news is that the gene affected by the fruit fly is used to produce a particular protein for nerve cells, and that same protein is found in humans. So the mini-sleep gene mutation may also allow humans to cope with less sleep. The catch, and there's always a catch, is that the mutated fly lifespan is decreased by almost one-third. So maybe sleeping in isn't so bad after all. And lastly, from the Deja Vu department. Researchers at the University of California have developed a simple desktop nuclear fusion device, capable of producing a stream of neutrons from just heating a crystal soaked in heavy hydrogen. Traditional fusion devices require enormous temperatures and pressures to cause hydrogen atoms to fuse into helium. The sun, for example, is a fusion device. But this new one operates at room and refrigerator temperatures. Isn't this cold fusion all over again? Those who remember Pons and Fleischmann, a pair of fusion scientists who announced a desktop fusion experiment promising to solve the world's energy problems in a test tube over 15 years ago, it turned out they were being a little premature, when no one was able to replicate their results at all. Since then, the idea of room temperature fusion has been a bit taboo. But this device seems to be the go. A crystal of lithium tantalate, designed so that when it is heated, it develops a strong electric field across its length. These electric fields rip electrons off the heavy hydrogen gas and accelerates them to enormous speeds. They then collide with the gas atoms, causing them to fuse into helium and release energy in the form of high-speed neutrons. It's simple and brilliant. But the researchers are quick to point out that they're not saying this means cheap fusion power for everyone. Their crystal fusion device produces hundreds of neutrons a second. Fusion power generators would need about a million times more than that.
Got a nasty spill to clean up? How about using nanoparticles made of iron? Dr. Andrew Feitz is a senior research fellow from the University of New South Wales and is one of this year's finalists in the Fresh Innovators Competition for Early Career Innovators. Dr. David Huang spoke with him about his new cleaning method.
What we've found is if we get tiny pieces of iron. So normally you find iron, sort of iron filings, which are like a couple of millimetres in size or maybe a centimetre in size. What we've found is if you reduce the size of those pieces of iron, so they're really fine. And when I say really fine, I mean they're about 1,000 times smaller than the width of a human hair. So they're very, very little tiny specks of iron. And what we've found is that these rust really fast, and as they rust, they produce oxidants that are capable of breaking down a lot of toxic organic compounds, like things like pesticides or other toxic compounds like that.
And what are the waste products at the end?
What are the waste products at the end? Well, basically, if it's these radicals that we, these oxidants that we produce, they're known to basically react with almost all organic compounds, and they can break them down. And if you expose it for long enough, you'll break down the toxic compound to right down to CO2 and water if you leave it there for long enough and you add enough oxidants to it. The byproduct of the iron is that you just produce rust, and so it's basically a non-toxic compound.
And how does this improve on existing cleaning methods for toxic chemicals?
Okay, if there is a spill at the moment, you know, the options aren't really great, especially if it's in the home or something. I mean, what do you do if you drop a bottle of, say, rose pesticide or rose herbicide or something in your garage? What some people do is they just hose it away. It's not real great because the toxicity is still there. Maybe try and mop it, but that's a really bad idea as well. Another alternative is if you're lucky enough, you might have an absorbent like cat litter that you could throw on it and sort of soak it up. But none of these techniques actually destroy the compound. What we've found is that we've found this pathway or this method that we can oxidize those sort of compounds. So what we're working on at the moment is a spray, so you can get these little iron nanoparticles, spray it onto your spill, and it should neutralize the spill, and then the byproduct is iron, rust. So it's fantastic.
And what stage of development is this technique at?
At this stage, we've proved that we can produce these really powerful oxidants, and we're working on developing a spray to actually do trials to see how it goes at actually decontaminating spills.
So you foresee commercialising it in some way?
Absolutely. I think it's a fantastic alternative to what's out there. You know, there's not much out there to treat these sort of spills, and there's really, absolutely, there's no really simple way to produce these oxidants. And we've found a very simple way to produce these oxidants, and that's just exposing iron to air.
Dr. Andrew Feit speaking with David Huang.
When it is winter, the cold wind blows his hair, so he hangs round the station. The station is warm. This farmer from Turkey, well, he's fled from his home, so he walks round the city, and he walks round alone. But this migrant's not asking for favors, no. This migrant's not asking for favors this time.
That's Not Drowning Waving with The Migrant. World-famous environmental activist Dr. David Suzuki will be in Sydney for the Writers' Festival in just a few weeks. Our very own Christine Baker caught up with him when he spoke in Sydney earlier.
Today in Canada, for many years, we've been hearing the media, politicians, business people telling us over and over again, listen, the economy is the bottom line. We've got to sacrifice for the sake of the economy. Our communities have to give up social services to keep the economy growing. The Environment Minister of Alberta a few months ago said, any environmentalist should understand that we need a strong, healthy economy in order to protect the environment. So it is the highest priority. Now, as a biologist, this has never made any sense to me at all. That the economy, a human-created activity, that this should be the bottom line. It's the earth. It's the earth that makes our lives and an economy possible. But I think by focusing on the economy as if it's everything, we are failing to recognize where we're going and what the real hazards we confront are.
From climate change to species extinction, from deforestation to population growth. The list of environmental problems that we've identified seems impossibly long. But in David Suzuki's holistic brand of environmentalism, we won't be able to solve any of these problems until we change the way we view our place in the world.
From the moment every one of us left our mother's body, we need air every minute of our lives until the moment we die. We pump 2 to 4 liters of air into our bodies and we filter whatever is in it. You can't draw a line and say, well, the air ends here and I begin there. There is no line. We are the air. It's in us, it's fused to us, and it's circulating throughout our bodies. Air is a physical substance, and the air that comes out of my nose goes straight up every one of your noses. We're embedded in the matrix of air. And if I am air and you are air, then I am you. We aren't separate entities. We're embedded in this stuff called air with each other, with all people around the earth. And not just with human beings, but with the trees and the birds and the worms and the snakes that are all using that same air.
This is the reason Dr. Suzuki says he's now lecturing to the very groups he used to knock. His passionate belief that environmental problems will not stop until all businesses, big and small, redefine their bottom line, and his ongoing optimism that this can actually be achieved.
Just a few weeks ago, cancer became the number one killer. Cancer was always number three after heart disease and stroke. Now it's the number one killer. What do you think that reflects? Maybe it's got something to do with the fact that we're treating air, water, and soil as a toxic dump. And if we are the air, and we are the soil, and we are the water, then what we do to the earth, we do to ourselves. To me, the real bottom line then is defined by the fact not that we are thinking creatures and have invented an economy, but that we are biological creatures. And the absolutely first bottom line that we have to protect at all costs is that we need clean air. We need clean water because every one of us is 60% water or more. We need clean earth, clean soil, because 98% of our food comes from the earth. And we take that food out of the soil and we put it into our own bodies. And we need clean energy because all of the energy in our bodies that we need to move and grow and reproduce is sunlight. Sunlight captured by plants that we then eat, or we eat the animals that eat the plants. We are the earth. We are created by earth, air, fire, and water. And that's, to me, the bottom line. We are also social creatures.
Dr. David Suzuki and our very own Christine Baker.
In 1964, astronomers Arno Penzias and Robert Wilson couldn't figure out the cause of a really annoying hiss of background noise messing up their radio telescope observations. When they finally tracked it down, they realized the hiss was coming from everywhere at once. The noise was coming from the universe. They had literally tripped over the slowly fading explosion of the Big Bang itself. Discovery, the National Science Radio Show. Maybe we're not everywhere in the universe yet, but we are broadcast Australia-wide, bringing you the latest news, views, glamour and gossip from the world of science, thanks to the community radio satellite.
Mobile phones are an inescapable part of modern life. They've revolutionised the way we live and work. They allow us to chat with a friend or arrange a business meeting at the touch of a few buttons, at any time and any place. As with other new technologies like the internet, mobile phones have been put to unexpected and interesting new uses. And because these technologies are so widespread, the potential impact of these applications can be significant. Take the treatment of mental health problems, like youth depression, for example. Dr. David Huang reports.
Depression is a mental health condition that affects young people more than any other age group. It's estimated that up to 30% of young people will suffer from depression at some stage during adolescence. Mobile phone use is also especially prevalent among young people. In fact, 85% of young Australians have mobile phones. So to Sophie Reed, a research psychologist at the Murdoch Children's Research Institute in Melbourne, the mobile phone seemed like a natural tool in the fight against youth depression. Dr. Reed has developed a software program that can be loaded onto a young person's mobile phone and then be used to track the development of depression. The program works a bit like a diary. It starts itself up several times a day and gets the user to answer a series of multiple choice questions about what they're doing and how they're feeling. The user answers the questions in much the same way they'd respond to a text message. Dr. Reed thinks that the program is more effective than other methods of keeping track of a young person's daily activities.
Out of all the sorts of ways that you could actually research a young person, I think using a mobile phone with something that looks like text is probably the best way to do it. Everybody hates doing those big long surveys that take an hour or questionnaires, and they're not really that keen on keeping diaries. So it's probably the best option out of all of them.
And according to Dr. Reed, the program isn't obtrusive.
They can sort of do it like they're texting, if you like. It's really... It's not obvious that they'd be answering a questionnaire or something like that, so they can just do it throughout their normal daily life.
Because mobile phones are such an integral part of many young people's lives, Dr. Reed thinks the program has great scope for helping young people.
The idea is that we can get this out to a broad... By using mobile phones, we can reach such a broad range of young people at such a low cost that we don't have to worry about trying to sort of tailor it specifically to hospitals or clinics.
The program is currently at an early stage of development. It's being used as part of a research study to gather information on the early warning signs of depression and the things that make depression better or worse. But Dr. Reed says that this is only the start.
What we'll do is we'll use that information to design the program further so that it actually gives the young person information at the end of a week or a month to give them feedback about how they're going and what they're doing, and then sort of maybe suggest a possible menu of treatment or assistance options that they could go to if they're feeling really worried.
Dr. Reed was recently named as one of 16 finalists in this year's Fresh Innovators competition for her development of the program. Her ultimate goal is to give young people more independence in dealing with depression.
So what we hope to do in the long run is use this information to hand over the care and treatment of depression back to young people, because one of the things is that you need to actually let young people do their own thing. You can't sort of force upon them help and treatment. We've seen that that doesn't work already. So what we're trying to do is find ways that we can actually give them the tools to help themselves.
Like the mobile phone, the internet is a piece of technology that has had an enormous impact on our everyday lives. And like the mobile phone, it's also been used to help people help themselves with mental health issues. Helen Christensen is a professor at the Centre for Mental Health Research at the Australian National University. She runs an interactive website called Mood Gym, which delivers therapy in the form of an online training program.
Basically, the person goes through a set of modules which are designed to teach them to recognise symptoms of depression and deal with the thoughts that underlie their reactions to particular events, to engage in various strategies such as sort of stress management, relaxation training, identifying precipitants that cause them particular distress.
A scientific study found that using the Mood Gym website resulted in a measurable improvement to levels of depression compared with not getting any mental health treatment at all. Mood Gym isn't specifically targeted at adolescents, but Professor Christensen believes that websites like Mood Gym can be especially helpful for young people, who are usually very comfortable with using technology like the internet.
Young people like technology. They, in fact, congregate in the internet space. They talk to each other frequently across it. They like health information to be combined with infotainment. And so there's a great potential to sort of capture the young audience.
And at the same time, young people may not feel at ease with seeking assistance from more conventional mental health services.
I believe the statistics show that 50% of people with mental health problems do not get help at all from the health professional. So the idea of sites like internet sites and chat groups and all the rest of it is that you actually might be able to engage that group of young people who might feel uncomfortable with a medical profession or who might feel stigmatised by their feelings or not understand their feelings and feel unhappy about revealing it to other people.
Currently, 4,000 to 5,000 people from around the world visit the Mood Gym website each week. While only 15% of users have registered for the site, that number still amounts to nearly 100,000 people who've registered and used some of the website. Professor Christensen thinks that the internet can play an important role in dealing with mental health issues.
I don't think it's going to be, you know, the full answer to how to get proper mental health services to people, but I think there's so much potential in just the way in which a small amount of electronic communication can improve people's lives so tremendously.
Professor Helen Christensen from the Australian National University. That report was compiled by David Huang, and the Mood Gym website can be found at mwodgym.anu.edu.au. That's all from us in this edition of Discovery. If you'd like to contact us, you can reach us via email at discovery@2ser.com or check out our website at www.2ser.com/discovery. Contributing to the program were Chris Stewart, David Huang and Christine Baker. Discovery has been produced by myself in the studios of 2SER Sydney and is broadcast nationally via the Community Radio Network. I'm Matthew Clark. Join us inside your radio receiver for more science goodness next week on Discovery. She shows me wild to look outrageous, a bright red colour in the sky. And now the clouds are closing over.